Hey, my gems. Hey, gemsters. Welcome back to another segment here on Gems Podcast. With me today is a very special guest by the name of Melissa Leon. She is phenomenal, and we're switching roles today. I get to interview her, and she had previously interviewed me on her podcast, It's Cool to Turn the Tables. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about who Melissa is, and then we're going to jump into a fun conversation. Melissa Leon is a 25-year finance professional passionate about teaching financial literacy. She co-owns 2 Cents Consulting, a bookkeeping and fractional CFO firm dedicated to helping small business owners make sense of their financial statements. She is the best-selling author and podcast host of Efficiency, Bitch! How Ambitious Women Can Have It All Without Doing It All. Melissa is a mother of 3 rambunctious children and knows the transformation from ambitious woman to supermom intimately. After fighting hard to have it all, she learned valuable lessons to establish harmony between womanhood, motherhood, and professional ambition. So without further ado, let's welcome the woman behind it all, Melissa Leon. Come on down.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going. And your bio is just the tip of the iceberg, but it is not all about who you are. And we could only put so much into a bio. So I'm so glad that we're going to dive deep. And the first way to dive deep with you is either a rapid fire 10 question game or an icebreaker. What are you in the mood for?
I really like your sound effects. Which one do I get more sound effects?
maybe the rapid fire. Maybe.
Okay, that's good. Let's go.
Okay, y'all. We're playing rapid fire with Melissa and Genesis. Question numero uno. What's one word to describe you, Melissa?
Oh, efficient.
Question number 2. If you could trade places with anyone for 24 to 72 hours, would you trade places? And if so, with who?
No, I don't think I would trade places with anyone. Grass is not always greener.
Love it. Question 3. What is one of your favorite songs right now?
Oh, I mean, we're all about Taylor Swift in this house. I have 3 small kids. 2 of them are tween girls. So anything Taylor.
Okay. Taylor. Did you go to the concert?
No, but they want to go to the movies, the Taylor Swift movie, which we haven't done yet, but I keep promising them we will.
Okay. Question 4. What is your favorite color?
Blue.
Oh, yes. Like mine, stick alike. Mine too. Question 5. Are you an escape the room, paintball type person, or going in and smashing time, or neither?
Was the first option escape room? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, escape room.
Escape room, definitely.
Yeah, y'all. Okay, question 6. What is your drink of choice? Coffee, tea, or something else?
Coffee.
Okay. Question 7. You get 3 random acts of kindness per day at minimum. What are your 3 for today?
3 random acts of kindness. Oh, that's a tough one, Genesis. I have to think about that. I'm all about teaching financial literacy. So I think act number 1 would be to help someone in need who's needing to learn more about money. Act number 2 is going to be about clothing and food safety. So maybe we'll do something for those less fortunate. And then I think the final one will be at the school. My kids all are in grade school, and school staff is always overworked and underappreciated.
Love it. Question 8. What is one thing that you do for yourself for self-care?
I read a lot. I am constantly learning podcasts, audibles, paper books. Okay. That's my thing.
Ooh, that's it. Bang. Question 9. What is one thing that gets you pumped up whenever you may be having a blue day?
reading again. I really like to read. I like to hear other people's thoughts. So if I'm in a bad mood, I'll go find a podcast that will put me in a better mood, or an Audible. I have like 3 or 4 Audibles that I switch through. So just depending on the mood of the day, that's where I'll go.
Okay. And question 10, numero 10, y'all. So this is the pass or play question. And here are the rules. If you pass, our roles are reversed. Or if you play, I ask one last question. What do you want to do? Do you want to pass or play?
I will play.
Okay, and last question here. What is one thing that you have done in your life that was crazy for others on the outside looking out, but it was actually character building for you?
Oh, writing my book. Oh my gosh. So many people are like, could never do that. How vulnerable, put it all out there, but best therapy you could ever imagine.
Love it. And what's the name of that book?
Efficiency Bitch.
Whoop! See, she's all about efficiency, bitch. Okay, now let's dive into the whole meaning of efficiency, bitch. We're not calling women female dogs. It's a bigger meaning behind it. So let's unpack that, Melissa.
Yeah. So when I first set out to write a book, I'm a finance professional. I've been in finance for a very long time. In fact, longer than even my career was established. I started my very first job at age 16. I was a bank teller. So I've been working with money, other people's money, way before I had any of my own. And it's just an area that I'm very comfortable in and very financially literate. So it's something that is really important to me. I set out to write my book to talk to other women, particularly mothers, to teach their children how to talk about money. Because generationally speaking, most women don't have a lot of understanding of how money works. Our fathers managed it, and it was not something that we were ever taught. So then how could we teach our children? And as I started writing that, a whole other bunch of stuff came out about time management and task management, all of which I am very passionate about. And I'm a mom. I have 3 kids. They're 8, 10, and 12. Built a business, you know, prior to even owning my own company, I was a world traveler for a major corporation. I was doing 200,000 airline miles a year. And so I learned how to get it all done. And as I was trying to like fit all this in, my sister said, you should start a podcast. And I was like, yeah, but what would I call it? And she's like, efficiency bitch. And the reason she said that is I called my mom an efficiency bitch when I was a teenager. We got into a fight and I called her that in not a nice way, but it turned into a love language for the 3 of us. And we've been calling each other EB and efficiency bitch for well over 15 years, maybe 20 at this point. And so it was a natural fun thing for me to, you know, nod to my mom and my sister. But as the podcast started evolving, as good things always do, right? You're always changing them. It turned into an acronym, which is where it landed and where it is today and where the book went to. And the acronym is BITCH, and it stands for bank, so money, inbox, think like task management, time, connection, so human relationships, and then harmony, which is the bow that ties it all together. Harmony was originally going to be health or happiness, but it didn't completely encompass the feeling. So my mom suggested harmony, and it's been probably one of the best received chapters and podcasts that I have.
I love it. And I want to go a little bit deeper because it all stemmed from when you told your mom efficiency, bitch. So like when you told her that in that moment, let's dive back into that. What was her response? And then how did y'all get over it?
Yeah, I was not being nice. So if I take you back to that moment in time, I was home from college my freshman year. I went to school about 3 or 4 hours away from my hometown. And I came home and my mom was having a football party, like their big University of Arizona football team fans. And my mom was having a party. And I was in the kitchen and I was like moving stuff around, doing my teenage thing. And she came in and was like, Melissa, get out of the kitchen. You're messing up my system. I have an efficient system. And I whipped around with, yeah, but you don't have to be an efficiency bitch. And she just stared at me, right? Like those mom eyes where you're like, oh, dang, I'm going to get it. And fortunately for me, the party was about to start. So she couldn't like open the can of worms right then and there. And I remember just all weekend being like, dang, this is going to be bad, right? I mean, I have used bad language in front of my parents before, but it never at them. Like that was a big deal. And she seemingly loved the phrase efficiency bitch and took pride in it. And so then it became our love language. And, you know, as I wrote a book and I've trademarked efficiency bitch, I have swag and hats and shirts and planners. I mean, like it's a whole thing. I had to really think hard about, do I want to have my name associated with a term that has been derogatory towards women for about 100 years? So I had to do a lot of research and a lot of soul searching to figure out if that was really the path I want to take. I have 2 daughters. I have 1 son. I'm a professional, right? Do I want to put the name bitch next to mine? And after a lot of research and understanding the historical significance mm-hmm. of it, I decided yes, absolutely.
So whenever you, this is just amazing. So whenever you decided to put the word next to your name, what was that one part where it was that green light for you to say, okay, I'm fully comfortable with this mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, as well as personally and professionally? Because whenever you are a woman in a certain industry, there are certain things that they want you to do and don't, because you know you're branded by association.
Yeah. So the root of the word as it stands as a derogatory term in the United States really started as a term against the suffragettes who were fighting for their rights to vote in the 1920s in this country. And, you know, it had been used before that to discuss promiscuous women or prostitutes, in some cases, women who were eager and aggressive for sex, was the way that that word was originally used. And as the women's suffrage really started in this country, there was many journalists who started referring to those suffragettes as bitches, meaning they were aggressive and trying to get what they wanted out of the men of this country, which was the right to vote and to own property. And so historically speaking, those women were fighting for their right for something. They were aggressively going out of place, so to speak, to get something that they needed. And I stand by that 100%. I will always be that person to step into what I think is right, not only for other women, but for all people. Mm-hmm. And so that was where I really rooted my stance in it. And I've explained that to my son and to my daughters, that the root of the word is a very powerful, it was meant derogatory, yes, but you can change the way that you receive it based on the power that you allow it to have. And so that's where I stand with it. My children are allowed to say efficiency bitch, that they're very, they like to say it, right? But they're not allowed to call each other a bitch, right? They're not allowed to use it in a nasty way, but they are allowed to take power over the word as they grow. And I think that's an important lesson for all of us. There's bad words and mean things people can say to us all the time. And we get to decide how we take that.
Yeah. How we hold the power and how we, you know, take that power that we hold and put it out in the world to like flip it, to take that negative connotation and make it something positive that will actually enlighten other people. When you think about just writing your book and some of the things that you had to overcome throughout the writing process, what would you say was the hardest part and the easiest?
I want to start with the hard. Yeah, I mean, it's all in the same, right? So writing is really hard and it's really scary. I'd say it was hard to start. It was hard to put pen to paper and like not try to edit it, not try to question myself, just get it all out there. And then somebody said to me, in the writing world, there's something called the shitty first draft, and you just have to do it. You just have to get it all on paper. It doesn't matter if it's grammatically correct. It doesn't matter if it's in the right order or the right formats, or you have chapters. You just need to write and get it all out, because what comes next is the developmental editing and it's the grammatical editing. That stuff all comes later. And believe me, you will read that book 400 times, maybe more, before it actually publishes, to look for flow and to look for, does it make sense to the reader, right? You have to tell things in a certain order in order for it to be understood. We read differently than we hear. And so those pieces come later. But the hardest part is getting past your own self-critic of wanting to edit it as you write it. And once it's written, like the really hard part is the self-promotion. The really hard part is asking people to read your words. The really hard part is letting them. It's a very vulnerable thing to put your heart and soul onto paper. And, you know, I host a podcast, so people can listen to me chatter all day long, but when they read my words, it has a very different impact on me. Especially when someone's like, "Hey, I read your book." And I'm like, "Oh gosh. Okay. Brace for this."
I could totally resonate with that part, because when I put out my book, Chocolate Drop in Corporate America, From the Pit to the Palace, the hardest part was, like, you know, just getting the fuel to the fire for me. It was like just taking those moments that happen, like in the oil and gas sector and the field, and just allowing those instances to just fuel me. But then the part where it was like, felt like the fire was being extinguished was like, what are people going to say? What are people going to think? Yeah. And I'm like, I can't worry about those people, but I can worry about the people who it's going to impact. And I have to keep on building that momentum. So like, I totally resonate with that. And then the other part is like, for you or me, is like the people who like told us to write a book or who kind of inspired us, letting them read the draft first, knowing that it's not fully done. And you're like, should I let them? Because they were kind of like my muse. So with your mom and sister, did they have any sneak peeks?
No, they were the last to read it. In fact, my sister, like, I didn't let my sister read it until it was finished and published. I don't know why. She was the one that was the scariest. She and my husband and my sister were the two that were the scariest for me. I did let my parents read it only because my mom nagged me to death about getting to read it. The first person I let read it was my business partner. And I think it's because I've always been vulnerable with her. We built a business together. You know, we made scary choices together. We trust each other completely when it comes to our money and our business and our livelihood. So she was the first one that got to read it. But it was really scary every step of the way. And those first ones, and then, you know, my publisher was like, I need you to send this to 20 people to do the advanced praise portion of the book to go in the front, like, you know, the little comments about it. That was really scary also. But it doesn't stop. The book's 1 year anniversary is November 4th. So coming up here very soon. It doesn't stop. I haven't stopped getting scared. I just did a book signing. I've done 5 or 6 book signings over the last 12 months, Barnes & Noble and some local retailers in places. And just this last weekend, I was at one. And when I walked in to the bookstore, there was a couple people looking at it. And it like made my heart happy. Like, okay, that's cool. Someone's looking at my book. And then a couple minutes later, somebody else walked by and like gave her friend one of those like eye rolls and was like, that's interesting, you know, cause she saw efficiency bitch, and it hurts. It's like, oh gosh, how come I can't just remember the good ones and not think about the bad ones? So yeah, it's tricky stuff.
And thanks for sharing that, because like, there's so much power in just sharing and holding space with others and just, you know, just being vulnerable, because sometimes that vulnerability that we share is actually the triumph that we get to carry on those days where we feel like, really that eye roll and stuff like that. We think about the big wins out there, and those little things do become smaller and smaller over time, even though in the minute I'm like, really, did you just really? And I was like, and you just almost want to intervene and say, well, actually, the reason why is da da da. But then you're like, why do I need to even explain myself to that person?
It's fine.
So with all the incredible things that you have going on, Melissa, being a mom, being a business owner, running a podcast, how do you get to go out there and encourage other women to do the same? Because sometimes you don't always want to be on. Like, sometimes you just want to be like behind the scenes, but you know, there's a bigger purpose out there.
Yeah. I've really let myself, evolve, I guess is the right word, through this phase of my life. I spent 20 years in corporate America, and then I switched out in 2020 and went into my own business and have spent a lot of time growing and building that. I was able to retire my husband from his corporate career last year to work for our company as well. So we've had a lot of big triumphs. But what comes with that shift and that change is that, one, I never leave my home because I work from home and then I live here. So that's a very strange thing that you have to kind of work through. And then also the idea that you're never leaving work. You're always, my office is always like two steps away. And so I've really had to allow myself some evolution through this process to learn some of my boundaries, to learn the ways that sometimes I need to take a client call at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, right? And other times I need to say no to it. And it's certainly an evolving process. I'd say I've been really lucky to be part of the podcaster community for the last 3 years because I've met some incredible people with some incredible knowledge and you know, you build friendships. And that's definitely been a huge space for me. Anytime someone's like, hey, I want to start a business or I want to do something, how do I start? And I'm like, get on podcasts, go meet cool people, because there's some cool people out there doing some good stuff. So it's an evolution, it's a process, and it's all about the community that you build.
I love it. So community, y'all, setting up boundaries, because I definitely can hear that in the midst of all that, is just knowing when to say yes, when to say no, knowing when to start and when to end your day. The fact of communication, because whether you realize or not, she communicates behind the scenes as well as on the forefront. And then having that strong support system, your family, your friends, your business partner, and et cetera, I think that's really big. But now for the men, because we don't want to forget y'all, fellas. So we have the efficiency bitch over here, but like, what do we call the fellas? Like, how do they, you know, come into the ecosystem?
You know, it's funny. I get asked that a lot. Can men be efficiency bitch? And absolutely. I mean, the way that I want this to work is that it's an all-inclusive type of environment, right? The title of the book is How Ambitious Women Can Have It All Without Doing It All, or the subtitle rather. But a lot of my story comes from the support and the efficiency of my husband. It's not all about me and me being in the spotlight. Without my husband being the support system that he's been, both with our family and raising the kids and cooking the meals and supporting me and my crazy ideas, I wouldn't be here. And the acronym applies to all people. So if you were to read the book and you go through bank, inbox, time, connection, and harmony, you wouldn't know I was talking to a woman necessarily, except for that I speak through my lens as a mother. But my goal really for all people, regardless of gender, is to work together and to recognize that it does take a team in order to get it done. Obviously, being a finance professional, I'm super keyed into the idea that you have to understand how money works in order to have your full harmony, right? I really believe that if money's not on your mind, it will eventually be on your heart, and that's not where you want it to be. You have to learn to manage your money before it learns to manage you. And so those places certainly are equal opportunity for both men and women in that space.
So on that note, because I know soon we're going to approach our time commitment, with managing money, how can you take your expertise along with the book and really get it involved in the school system at a level that is comprehensible for them, like grade school, despite the name? Because I feel like sometimes the school system does not do it enough to teach younger people about financial literacy and how to really steward their finances. Because let's be honest, some of the things that I learned in school, like, and from grade school all the way up to my graduate degree, is like, it's not applicable, some of the stuff. And I, well, sorry, not graduate. Yeah, I have a bachelor's, but graduate is next.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. People say this to me a lot, right? It's not, we don't teach it well in this country. And unfortunately, money is such a taboo topic for most people. You're not supposed to talk about it. schools really shy away from it. It's just like religion. Schools will shy away from religion, from politics, and from money. And the reason is that it's such an emotional thing at the home base. And so the schools don't want to touch it. I mean, they have some basic curriculum to teach you how to write a check. And like my 8-year-old learns how to count currency and things like this. But by and large, they're not going to teach you money management. And it's because it's such an emotional topic at home. My recommendation to parents is always, you have to learn to desensitize it for yourself so that you can have those conversations with your children. I promise you, if you're not having those conversations with them as children, you won't be comfortable having those conversations with them as teenagers and or as adults. And they do need this. If they're not getting it from you, they're not going to get it from anywhere. And we know how dangerous that can be. I was having a conversation this morning with a client who has quite a bit of credit card debt. And she was saying, you know, I don't know how I'm ever going to get out of this. What do I do? What do you recommend for my savings? And I said, when you have this amount of credit card debt, I do not recommend that you have a savings account. You don't want to make 3% on your $2,000 in savings when you're paying 30% in credit card interest. It's the math is upside down, but you have, she was like, oh, like, in her mind, she was trying to build a savings account because somebody told her one time she needed to have a savings account. But meanwhile, she's got $10,000 in credit card debt. It doesn't make any sense. So you have to have people who already know or who've been through it to be able to teach you some of the things that you don't know. You don't know what questions to ask. There's a lot of information out there. It can be very, very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. A great place to start is inside your own home. People who are really uncomfortable talking about money, I recommend you go look at your bank account 2 or 3 times a day. It will start to desensitize you from the idea that money is bad and that you shouldn't talk about it. We talk about money in this house a lot. And just the other night, my kids were asking me about college. Do I have enough money to afford for the 3 of them to go to college? And then it was like, well, here's how much a in-state university costs. Here's how much an out-of-state university costs. Here's how much I have saved for you. Now we need to do some math. I mean, you can have general conversations with children without getting intimate details to them about your financial situation. But overall, the conversation has to start at home every time.
I love that. And so one of the tips I heard so far is go look at your bank statement 2 to 3 times a day. Can you share 2 more practical tips with the audience that we can give them as homework? Because what good is hearing this conversation? Because I think in order for you to be an efficiency bitch, it's like you need to take the knowledge that we have dropped and applied it in order so you could get on your way to efficiency.
Yeah. First thing I'd say is if you are an employee, meaning you get a paycheck from an employer, you want to find out first if they have a 401k offering. If they do, and a lot of them do, particularly if you're working at a large company, if they offer a 401k match, you need to sign up for that yesterday. That is free money all day long. You will never find a better investment than 100%, which is what a 401k match will do for you. Do that today. Go ask the questions. The other thing I would say is that if you don't know how much you spend on a monthly basis, I would encourage you to do 2 things. The first is to get a piece of paper out right now and write down all of the places you think you spend your money. So rent or mortgage, insurance, gasoline, food, kids, sports, you know, school stuff, all the places you think, just like an exhaustive list. And then maybe a week from now, when you're not so frustrated or tired from that, go back through your actual bank account and compare it to real numbers. And I promise you, you will find things that you forgot, or you will find things that cost more than you recognized. Money's kind of like eating. We always eat a few more calories than we think we are. And that's why when you're dieting, writing down all of your calories really matters. And it's the same kind of idea in money management. And that just gives you an idea, right? It's just it's a fast place to start. I'm a big, big fan of Rocket Money, which is an online app where you can link your bank accounts and it will kind of help categorize that stuff for you. It's very reasonably priced and you can use tools like that, but paper and pen work just as well.
Amazing. And thank you so much for sharing that, Melissa. And the other tip I'll add, y'all, if you're are color coordinated, get out highlighters, different color highlighters, and look at your bank statement and all the ones that are food expenses, highlight that one color. All the ones that are like insurance or whatnot, highlight that another color, and then credit cards. And then that way you could begin to color coordinate things. And then you're also building those healthy habits. And you could do this on a monthly basis, if that's easier, a weekly basis, or either a daily basis. And then you could also set limits to your debit cards and et cetera, because that will also help you from overspending and just keeping yourself in, you know, accountable with yourself and your money. So Melissa, tell them how they could connect with you and engage in this conversation further. And where to get that book? We already know Barnes & Noble has it.
Yeah, my book's everywhere. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target, all the places. Efficiencybitch.com is probably the easiest thing to remember. I am on social media at efficiencyb because Meta won't let me put bitch. But my business is 2centsconsulting.com, S-E-N-S-E. And so you can find me at 2centsconsulting.com or 2centsconsulting on social media. I'm all over the place.
And there you have it. Become an efficiency bitch with Melissa Leone. And we will be dropping all the links in the show notes. But the most important place to find all the info is efficiencybitch.com. Go there. And if you want to learn more about the podcast and become a brand sponsor, all my contact information will be down below. So tap in with us. Until next time, peace, love, and lots of blessings. Go be efficient. You got this.